So I'm going to read the following Karen's lead. I'm going to read just the bottom half of our proclamation. Whereas Joe Demini, York Industrial Technology student, earned a national medal at the National Skills USA Conference and competition by placing second in the technical drafting camp competition. And whereas these accomplishments bring pride and prestige to your community high school, to District 205, and to our community. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Education and Administration of Elmhurst Community Unit School District 205 express congratulations to Joey and his parents, and the faculty of the Industrial Technology Department, Department Leader Ken Ross, Joe Scouts, Dan Callenberg, and Ron Roback for this outstanding achievement.
Citizens or representatives of other public agencies. As a reminder, there's a timer that will quietly beep with the 3-minute mark, and we ask you to wrap up your comments in that time. Michael Crowley.
We're going to talk about $160 million, and we don't need to have a full house. It's crazy. I'll open and close with the same comment. Rarely is a good decision made with bad data. Several slides and bar graphs were displayed during the District 205 meeting last week. Several questions were asked by the board and the superintendent. The answers were provided. Unfortunately, some of the questions that were not asked last week. What is the estimated population of the city of Elmhurst? Answer, 45,000 people. How many trust folks in Elmhurst? Answer, 16,300. So what would be the statistically appropriate survey sample for a significant question asking Elmhurst taxpayers to support a $168 million loan to the school district? Should the survey sample be 20%? 10%, 5%. Well, let's do the math. The survey sample was 300 households. That's 1.8%. Less than 2% of the taxpaying households in Elmhurst were contacted for a survey, and we're going to ask them to approve $168 million. A community financial irresponsibility and how taxpayer funds are not being utilized to help students in the classroom, you need to look no further than the District 205 parking lot. Every single parking space has a dedicated sign stating who can park in the spot and the hours therein. Some of the District 205 members here today were present when taxpayer funds were wasted on those individual parking signs. In closing, I've been touched my comments here. In closing, with 100 people in this room tonight, would you only ask 2 people, 2%, if it was appropriate to ask the entire home-owning taxpayers of Elmhurst for $168 million loan? Again, rarely is a good decision made with bad data.
members of the board have affirmed that Superintendent Dr. David Moyer recently applied for a superintendent's position in a large out-of-seat district. Dr. Moyer has since withdrawn from the preliminary search. However, the board wants time to further discuss his commitment to District 205. As a result, the board will postpone its vote on the referendum until Monday, August 20th. While we, the board, believe this is the community's referendum, we want to ensure its leader is committed to District 205 at this time. Thank you. Moving on to reports and presentations, Dr. Henderson will talk about summer professional learning. Happy New Year's Eve. As we are ready to embark on a new school year with our students tomorrow, I'm here to talk about professional learning and curriculum development. And what I would say is this is something the board should take quite a bit of pride in. What I'm going to share with you tonight and with the community is a report that highlights the commitment that our district places on professional learning for all of its employees, more so than any district I've ever come into contact with. And it really should be a point of pride and a point of celebration. Just as a reminder, I wanted to put in a slide that highlights our learning and teaching priorities for the 2018-19 school year, which are creating an understanding of the district vision, strategies, and priorities, and developing systems for how we will measure whether that vision has been attained. The second priority is developing curriculum resources and assessments that are aligned with rigor, relevance, and the six C's in key content areas. And then finally, supporting the use of rigorous and relevant instructional strategies and the six C's for all of our District 205 students. These priorities really are the filter when we're making decisions, when we're planning professional learning, and not implementing anything in the district. So I'm going to start with professional learning communities. At the start of the summer, all nine of our EC5 schools participated in 2 days of training. This was something our 6-12 schools participated in the 17-18 school year, so we're continuing that training. There were teams from each school, anywhere from 8 to 10, administration and then teacher leaders. Sydney Harrison is a name that you've heard me use a few times. She has worked with our instructional coaches and has been so well received by our teachers and our principals that we've brought her in. She also does some work with our professional learning communities. Each school developed action plans, and that professional learning impacted 9 administrators and 80 teachers. Next is our district administrative team, and that involves our Department of Learning and Teaching, our cabinet, our special education supervisors, all of our principals, and all of our assistant principals. This year, over the summer, in preparation for our visit yesterday with Eric Scheninger, we participated in a new type of learning for us, which was a blended learning opportunity. So we launched the learning in May at our district administrator retreat, and then we did an online learning for the summer. So using Google Classroom, we participated in reflection posts and then an online dialogue in between our leaders. Again, that was something new for our leaders and something they can take and replicate with staff. The next one is really a great opportunity for one of our Sanford Middle School teachers, Jen Lehman. Jen is very active in bringing innovative technology practices to the classroom and for our students. She is the Creative Technology Department Chair for the district and is a creative technology teacher at Sanford. She presents at District Institute Days at conferences around the country, and she was selected from a very selective application process to go to Google Innovator Training and Certification. It's the highest level that Google has for training and certification, and is one of 3 that we have here in our district. So it was a great opportunity for Jen. The next is the International Society for Technology and Education, known in school circles as ISTE. This was a national level conference that was in Chicago. So 2017-18 school year, we really wanted to take full advantage of that. And as you can see, we had 71 administrators, coaches, and teachers attend that conference. Two of our coaches actually presented at the conference on difficult conversations with peers. And as you can see, this was a Twitter post tweet from one of our instructional coaches who's attending a session on how can we amplify the use of video in the classroom, which is a wonderful assessment tool when we're looking for different ways that our students can demonstrate their knowledge. The weekend at this team, and the week is a very busy week because at the same time, we had several of our district leaders who were at Model Schools. Model Schools is put on by the International Center for Leadership and Education. That is work with Dr. Bill Baggett, who was in the district last year. The Rigor and Relevance Framework, which is a driving force in our instructional improvement efforts. And you can see that we had six of our administrators attend that. It's a very high-quality conference, and people come away with lots of things to take directly back to their school, and this year was no different. In literacy, I've been going to some content areas. There was both professional learning and curriculum development, and really the benefit of doing this during the summer is it minimizes the time we have to pull teachers out of the classroom during the school year, which is something that the Department of Learning and Teaching is really trying to focus on. So for professional learning, Tamara, our director of literacy, attended a week-long intensive workshop on writer's workshop, which is something the district put into place, I believe it was 4 years ago. So that was to further her own education. Then we had professional learning for Words Fair Way, which is a word study program using grades 2 through 5. We had 50 teachers come over the summer for that. Fontes and Pinnell is a phonics program for our K-1 students, and we had 50 teachers who came for that as well. As you can see in the right column, there's a list of the various projects going on in literacy for our curriculum development. To highlight a couple of them, you can see that we had some staff working on new courses for our K-205 university, and that's really in response to the changes we're making in instruction. As instructional shifts happen, we need to make sure that the professional learning courses that we're offering our teachers stay current and stay fresh. Also, I'd like to highlight the interdisciplinary coursework that's course writing that's going on with the York High School Department, and we have 20 teachers from York who worked on that over the summer. In the area of STEM, a lot of professional learning. We had Project Lead the Way, which is a requirement of implementing that program. Each teacher who's going to teach the content has to be in a week-long training. It's a very, it's not only high quality, but it's very intensive. It is long days, evening work, prep work before they even attended the training. Quite a lot of work, and we had 8 teachers across all 3 middle schools attend that. Have our K-5 Reach Math teachers who are shifting and implementing Eureka Math this year, and 6 of those teachers came for professional learning. I'm really pleased to see the last 2 bullet points using defined STEM in the classroom. We had 39 of our elementary teachers come for professional learning for that, and 27 of our middle school teachers. That's an area that Dave and Mark Cohen have really worked to further help our teachers become familiar with and get that integrated into the classroom. So having 66 teachers participate in that is great news. As you know, we've made some changes to our 6th grade math, de-leveling that math 1 and math 2, and we have 13 teachers participating in professional learning just to become more familiar with how they can differentiate that instruction. We ran professional learning for teachers who are new to Eureka Math, and then some very targeted professional learning for our 6th grade math teachers and at Conrad Fisher for guided math, which is a way of really personalizing and differentiating math for targeted instruction for what kids need. We know that we have an achievement gap in math at Fisher, not that they are our only school, but we really are focusing some strategic efforts at Fisher this year to change some of the ways that we are instructing. You can see in the area of curriculum development, we had for Science curriculum development process. For language acquisition, we did a lot of professional learning and curriculum development for dual language. I was over at Fisher today, and our dual language team was presenting to the rest of the Fisher staff the process they've gone through, and the staff was incredibly excited to welcome our dual language learners tomorrow morning. So I'm very excited to get there. So for professional learning, our dual language teachers, my teachers, Ariana Leonard and Jay Bailey, attended a Biliteracy Summer Institute, and then they attended a Biliteracy Curriculum Writing. Both of those opportunities included some of the strongest, most respected voices in dual language, so they had an opportunity to really work with and learn from the best out there. In world language, we had 11 teachers who were working on just finalizing the alignment between our high school and middle school levels 1 and 2 curriculum. For our English learners, our EL students, we have professional learning. We have one teacher from New York who is attending a train-the-trainer type of model to work on using the WIDA standards. WIDA standards are the PMD descriptors for the progression of EL language for our language development. And then we had 25 teachers, secondary teachers, who participated in some professional learning on co-teaching strategies specific to English language learners. We began in research and program analysis to further refine our acceleration at the middle school. Has been working working with our team leaders at middle school to get input and to interact with the new scheduling program we have that will help lessen the load on our team leaders when they are scheduling our students into acceleration units every 3 weeks. Our social studies curriculum development continued this summer. It began last year, and 50 teachers participated in the actual curriculum writing over the summer. That will continue throughout this year. I mentioned our D205 university courses just a little bit. We offered 6 courses over the summer with 79 teacher participants. 3 of those courses were new, again, in an effort to stay current with what our teachers need, something we could probably all participate in, but new smart news and information literacy and how we bring that to our kids to make them critical consumers. Understanding effective classroom evaluation, that was a course that was taught in conjunction with Homehurst College. And then making workshops work. That's really talking about our instructional model, the workshop, whether it's in reading or in math. So in summary, for professional learning, we offer 21 different experiences for our staff. If every one of those participants were unique individuals, it was 493, which is well over half of our staff. All 13 schools were impacted by the professional learning we offered this summer. When it comes to curriculum and program development, we have 13 unique projects going on with 257 staff, and those projects are impacting 12 of our schools. So, again, this is such a point of pride and something really that has caused us to celebrate. Our staff have worked incredibly hard over the summer. I can say that our learning and teaching team kept wondering when the slow time was coming in the summer. And when I started putting all this together, I thought, well, no wonder it never felt like slow time. We've been busy, but it's great work, and we'll have such a positive impact on students. So, thank you. Any questions? I was just going to say thank you for this. Like, there was a time when there wasn't as much professional development in our school district, and you've really built this up to be really impactful and I feel like very accessible and easy and practical. I know as a former teacher, if you can take something and use it the next day or, you know, at the beginning of the school year, it was, you know, very useful. So thank you, because I know it's a lot of behind-the-scenes work, so. So I know that you references 13 schools and 12 schools, you know, professional learning or curriculum and program development. Is it also across grades?
Yes, so we're representing.
Yes, so a variety of grades. The only curriculum project, the only school that's not involved in program development or curriculum work right now is Madison. But otherwise, the programs are across grades. A lot of it is cutting across levels. So you saw the professional, the curriculum development for our world language that cuts across
two other questions. One is, so this is the summer work, and then throughout the year, is there follow-up, or is there reinforcement, or what's that kind of look like?
Yes. So, so the professional learning communities that I started the presentation with, that will continue. We will bring Cindy back in, but it's also something that our EC5 principals and I will work on at our EC5 meetings monthly, that they take that back to their leadership teams, which then goes out to each grade level. So that is one example. Our D12-5 university courses, as teachers learn new strategies, new implementation models, the director of learning and teaching that is tied to that content area goes out and visits the classroom to see how things are being implemented, what additional supports they could provide. That's a new piece that we've added in the last 6 months or so, but we feel that that helps us ensure that what we're spending time on, what teachers are investing in, is actually having an impact on the classroom. And lastly, can you share the feedback process? So everything that we do, for example, yesterday was our teacher and student, everything gets followed up with a survey to teachers to gather feedback. Feedback's gathered on our D12-5 university courses. The curriculum process is ongoing, so those teams work closely with a director of the content area and are providing ongoing feedback. You're welcome. Thank you. Okay.
Recap of budget year 2017-2018.
Fiscal year 2017-18, these financials are on the cash basis that we keep internally every month on the cash basis of accounting. The auditors will be back here in front of the board in December with the accrual basis financial statements. But as far as the revenues are concerned on a cash basis, operating revenues were up 8.5% over last year and 106.7% of budget. We've been talking about this since December, about the timing of property tax collections. The income tax had a change in their law, so that resulted in taxpayers across the country really prepaying their property taxes, and so that resulted in a much higher percentage collection in May and June of the property taxes. In the last 12 years, District 205, on average, collected 49.36% of their extension in May and June. This year, the district collected 54.56, so about $5.4 million more than in an average year. So this is just a timing or a shifting of revenues forward from 2019, when it normally would have been collected in September, and instead it was collected in May and June. So that increases the revenue for the cash basis 2017-18 year, and it decreases the revenues in the budget year that we're going to talk about after the recapping. Similarly, state revenues also have a timing concern, our timing of collections. This year, the state implemented the evidence-based model of state funding, and coming into the fiscal year, the state was 2 quarters behind in categorical grants. So then, to categorical grants, the special ed personnel, which is $1.7 million, and the extraordinary special education funding, which was $1 million, were incorporated into the So the 2% was what worked well this year. You know that salaries and benefits make up about 80% of our operating expenditures. Salaries were $76.5 million with an increase of 4.4%. We had a good year in benefits, knock on wood. We are self-insured, as you know, and the claims experience was better, and the renewal included a 2.82% decrease in the PPO and a 0.87% decrease in the HMO. So overall, the benefits at $15.9 million decreased by 3.9%, and so that helped to keep the overall expenditures within the 2% increase. So then from a fund balance standpoint, the delineation on the revenues really inflated the fund balance to this year we're at 49.33% of expenditures. We've discussed fund balance provides a runway for us to absorb future negative financial changes that we may not be able to avoid, such as a pension cost shift, property tax fees, those type of things. So that's it for the financial recap of 2017-18. So any questions on 17-18 before we go to the 18-19 budget?
I guess I just wanted you to kind of put into context, if you can, typically the state has been behind in paying us. It sounds as though they're trying to, this year they tried to pay us, or they did it actually, right? That's the first question. And secondly, because we've been down a payment or two or three in the past, and not that it would just be your opinion, but based on what we know about what's happening with evidence-based model and funding for a district in DuPage County like Elmhurst, that the state may have been wanting to make sure that we were at least, I'll call it whole, if you will, or that they were current in paying us, because the evidence-based model, we're not going to be getting any new revenue. So how does that impact us? So I know I didn't prepare you for that, but that's something that we have to be thinking about and, you know, putting these numbers into context.
So the mandated categorical, which are the quarterly state funding grants that we received, we started the year 2 years or 2 quarters behind. We ended up finishing the year 1 quarter behind. So they caught up by 1 quarter, so we received 5 quarters this year. But some of the categorical funds are now in the evidence-based model. So that was interesting that I knew the evidence-based model was coming. So then I thought the mandated categorical grants that were not in the evidence-based model would fall further behind when actually they caught up by one. So that was a bit of a surprise to me. So when some counts were budgeted 3 quarters, we got 5. And that was a surprise. I guess this year I budgeted 4 quarters in those. And I mean, it's hard. It seems like we get 5-3. But really, you can't tell with the state, really. So I budgeted 4 and FYI 19. But as far as the evidence based model is concerned, it was kind of interesting when I first did the calculations. We were in Tier 4, which meant the tier funding for the district was going to be $10,000. Then they did another calculation later when we were in Tier 3 and we were going to get $180,000. Then another calculation later in the year and we were back to Tier 4, getting $10,000. That's where it ended up last year. So now, we just, last week at the end of the week, after the budget was done, they came out with the FY19 evidence-based model, and we're back to Tier 3. sold last year were at $6.3 million. Their new calculations was at $6.6 million, $495,000. So that's the additional tiered funding that amount above 6.3. So the $195,000 or whatever it was, is tiered funding. So it's kind of interesting. We're hovering right at that. The 100% of adequacy is the line between tier 3 and tier 4, and now they're calculating us at 99%. So we're back to tier 3 and down a little more funding in the evidence based model for FY19. Hoping that stay in tier 3 for the whole year. So that was my best shot at answering your question.
I have a request. It's really not a question, but we're going to talk very shortly about the possibility of borrowing a lot of money. And in previous finance committee meetings, we talked about our current credit rating at AA+. And if I remember correctly, the reason that we weren't rated AAA at Standard & Poor's said that we didn't have enough fund balance on hand. Now that our fund balance has increased due to early payment of property taxes, would you be willing to go back to Standard & Poor's and ask, at what level? I'd hate to miss AAA by just a few dollars. And if you could go back and ask what their threshold is between that AA+ and AAA credit rating, that would be helpful information.
We will definitely give a run at the AAA if we ever go for balance again. I'll make sure we do everything we can to investigate the AAA.
Great. Thank you.
Chris, I just had an idea. Talked about these numbers earlier today. I just wanted to make sure that we have context here for our parents. So it's just that it's on 7.77, and you said approximately 5.5 million, that 5.45 of that is early property tax increase or collections. And so if you back that up, which is really should be shifted to this next fiscal year, which we'll talk about in a minute, the total is at 2.3 to 2.4 million. And then to put in context of that number is around 1.7% of revenue. So that's the cushion that we had. So, yes, it's a positive number. It has to be because we can't run out of money. Because you can't adjust your cost structure when all of it's later in the middle of the year. So I just thank you for running a budget this way. I don't want people scared at that 7.77. It's just not a bad number. It's really 1.7% of revenue, which is without margin for error. It's acceptable, I think, is the way we've been around the district in the past. So thank you.
All right, so we want to move to the tentative budget. Tonight, the board will vote to approve on the 2018-19 tentative budget. The notice for the tentative budget will be published in the newspaper and will be put on display for 30 days. The public hearing on the final budget will be September 25th at 7:30. We'll be making adjustments that I talked about, just giving those numbers late last week. We'll be getting those, but also when we did the tentative budget, there were a lot of HR was in the middle still of onboarding people, so we had a lot of vacancies and we were using estimated salary amounts, estimated insurance amounts. All of that will be tightened up and more accurate for the budget that we will have for you in September. So we don't want to go into a great amount of detail on the tentative budget tonight because we'll do more of that at the September 25th when we have final numbers and more accurate numbers, but the overall operating budget, we are budgeting property taxes of $102,039,770. That's 83% of our operating budget, with total operating revenues of $122,653,650. so that's an annual operating deficit of $2,544,884. That results in our operating fund balance estimated to end the year at 45.38% of expenditures. The grand total revenues, including net operating, is $138,588,643. Expenditures of $140,393,428. So an overall annual net loss for the year of $1,084,785. The budget has revenues down 4%. That is due to the timing of collections and property taxes and state funds. And operating expenditures are budgeted to increase 4.3%. So that sums up the budget report for this evening.
So if I take that 5.4 out of the old one and I add it to this one, I get 2.9 million of the surplus, which is about 2.3% of revenue, which at this stage, tentative budgeting is a pretty good number. And so, again, just trying to set things level. We had a slight surplus last year. We projected a slight surplus this year. If you adjust for the property tax or the collection, you move it into the correct year, it should be
correct. Thank you, Chris.
Superintendent's agenda, consent agenda. Would anyone like to pull an item?
I just have one question. The acceptance of posting of the tentative budget is mislabeled. I think it says fiscal 18, it should be fiscal 19. So because the resolution itself is fine, so can we leave it there? Does it need to be corrected? We can vote on it as part of the consent agenda.
Superintendent's agenda action item tonight. Any communication?
I just want to and Karen, we're here yesterday, but I think that we're able to attend our opening teacher institute. We're going to have a report on the opening of school activities in September. Consistent with some of the priorities that we're trying to advance as it relates to our instructional programs. And I think we're able to reinforce things in a somewhat practical way for our teachers to absorb and apply. So I think we had a pretty good day yesterday. I visited some buildings today. And one of the things we started doing last year with the board president, which was Shannon at the time, and our members teachers council president Max Schoenberg is the three of us together visit each of the school sites during the first several days of school, and that's something that is very enjoyable, so looking forward to that. And that would be it.
Any board communications? Tuesday, August 28th.
Board of Education meeting here at District 205 Center, and Tuesday, September 11th, Board of Education meeting at 7:30 at District 205 Center.